My name is Michael Coates, and these conversations highlight the challenges, achievements, and societal issues within social housing. In this episode, I speak with a client of Single Homeless Project. We talk about how, age 14, his dad became ill with dementia, and he became a child carer. We speak about his relationship with alcohol, his mental health, debt, and the compassionate judge that helped him keep his home. This podcast was created by Combat Pest Control in partnership with SHP. Episode 2, Scott. This is Breaking the Cycle.
What was your first childhood memory?
It was me and my brother covered up on a big chair, big armchair. And we had a tortoise. Can't remember what the name was, but that's the earliest memory that I can remember. And I never knew my mum, but as soon as I think of that image in my head, I've got an impression that there's a female presence there. So that's basically my earliest memory.
Was it you and your brother and your dad growing up?
Yeah. That's the way I've always known it.
And you were born in the
71.
Yeah. So was that common then at that time for a dad to look after his children?
No, it was normally the women or the mums used to look after the, used to have, for want of a better word, custody of the kids.
Mm.
But back then, it was sort of like almost frowned on for men to look after the kids.
Like a feminine job to do.
Yeah, I mean, unless the mum passed away or something, then it would normally be the mum that would look after the kids.
And when you were very little, when it's, you know, you, your brother, your dad, you're from Lambeth.
Yep.
Was it a happy childhood? Do you have happy memories of early,
yeah,
early life?
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't say I never wanted for nothing, but there was a few times that we had to tighten our belts. But that's what happens with most families.
Mm.
You know, you go through good times, you go through bad times. So, I mean, the one good thing about the bad times is when it was good times, it made it even better.
Mm.
So that's a positive way of looking at it.
Do you have a good relationship with your brother growing up as well? Was you too close?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even though we were half brothers, we always class ourselves as full brothers, you know? I mean, we did have sibling rivalry, like all kids do. You know what I mean? We had a love-hate relationship, for want of a better word.
Good wrestle every now and again.
And sometimes a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but as you grow older, you forget about the bad things and the negative things. And you just remember the good times that you had.
Did you feel safe as a child, a small child, growing up? A good community around you?
Yeah. Yeah, because one of my best mates, it's his birthday tomorrow. His mum would go round and pick up a few kids from people that were going to work or whatever, and then she'd march us all down to nursery and primary school, which was nice, you know what I mean? And I class her as a mum that I never had, if you know what I mean. So, I mean, I'd always be invited. Even now, I'm still invited to the weddings, birthday parties, remembrances, funerals. And if I'm not there, a lot of the family go like, where's Scott?
You're an extended part of the family.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, yeah. Which was nice, you know what I mean? So that was a little bit of sank extra that I managed to get in life.
Yeah.
Which was so nice, you know what I mean?
What did your dad do for a living?
He was a slate and tiler, like doing roofs, basically. And then apparently me and my brother were, for want of a better word, brats. And no one would babysit for us after X amount of time. He couldn't find no one in the whole of Lambeth to look after us because apparently we did tend to play up a little bit.
Boisterous, they call it.
Yeah.
So what happened? Did you used to go to work with him?
Sometimes we'd go to work with him. And then, because back in the day before health and safety, they used to just sling the slates and the tiles off the roof and into a skip. Obviously, some of them never made it into it. So they'd smash on the side of the skip or hit the floor. And then all of a sudden, someone would go, right, stop that. And then they'd come with a wheelbarrow. Me and my brother sitting in the wheelbarrow. They'd wheel us over to where the skip is. And then, right, come on, up out, you two. Do your job. And we had to pick up the broken slates and tiles off the floor, stick them in the wheelbarrow. And then go back to a safe distance. And then it'll all happen again.
Was your dad a hard worker?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he was. But then, unfortunately, he gave it up to look after me and my brother because, as I said, no one would touch us with a 10-foot barge pole. No one would babysit us. So
work became difficult. But to manage, manage everything, you know, that's full on, isn't it? A dad with two children.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, because I've got twins myself, I know what it's like. It's not easy, even with two parents, let alone one. So, but he made that sacrifice to give up his job and look after me and my brother and bring us up proper and right. You know?
Did he teach you good values?
Oh, yeah.
Manners and respect.
Yeah, he always said, please say please and thank you. It costs nothing. It'll open more doors than it'll ever close. Always be polite and courteous. I mean, like, I suppose they're more or less old school values now compared to a lot of people nowadays.
I mean, they're certainly evergreen. They last forever. You know, it's good advice to carry on again and again.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Did you go to school?
Yes. Went to primary school, nursery school, then primary school, and then secondary school. But I had to leave secondary school early to become a carer for my dad.
What happened to your dad?
Well, first of all, he was diagnosed with senile dementia. And then a year or two later, or X amount of time later, I got called in by the doctor. And then he turned around and said to me that, oh, right, got some good news for you. We know what your dad's got now. And I'm like, okay, good. What is it? Alzheimer's. I'm like, okay, right. So how do we treat it? And he's gone like, well, it's only just been given a name. So we don't even know hardly anything about it. So then I had to go through all that, in and out, seeing a doctor. Oh, we might be able to do this for him. We might be able to do that for him.
And you're only 14 at this point when you became a carer?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, so you're an early teenager. Did it weigh on you at an early age? Did you feel the responsibility?
Oh, like a ton of bricks. Oh, my shoulders were so heavy, it was unbelievable. I mean, even my dad's... I've forgotten what she was, social worker or whatever she was from Molesley. She saw it was weighing so heavy down on my shoulders that she sort of like called me in every so often just to have a chat with me, just to try and relieve the burden off my shoulders. So, I mean...
Just for a chat.
Yeah, that was just so nice. I mean, it wasn't in her job description. She'd done that off of her own back. She wasn't asked to do it. So, I mean, that's like what I say. There are still good people out there.
What did being a carer for your dad entail? What did you do day to day? You know, you wake up, what's next?
Well, it would normally be breakfast, cup of tea, breakfast.
And you'd be making this. You'd go and get breakfast for your dad, make him a cup of tea.
Oh, yeah. He taught us from an early age how to, like, cook and whatnot. I don't know if he knew what was coming, but...
He prepped you for it.
Yeah. But then after X amount of time, then he started to soil himself. He couldn't help it.
Yeah.
So, like, I'd go in... Wake him up with a cup of tea and then, okay, right, Dad, I need to clean you up. And then after I've cleaned you up, we need to get you in the bath. And then I'd have to help bath him, which back then it seems really strange. But nowadays it's probably a more normal thing.
Well, for a child to bath their dad, I mean, there's compassion there, but, you know, it's a bit of a role reversal. Did you feel, did you ever feel upset with your dad? Because, you know, you're bathing your father.
No, I never felt upset with him because I had to bath him. I realised from early on that he couldn't help it. You know what I mean? It's just a natural bodily function, and he couldn't control that. So I had to do what I had to do. Step up to the plate and jump in hands first, basically.
So you'd look after him, you'd make sure he was clean on a day-to-day basis. Did it get to the point where he couldn't do anything? Was you literally keeping him going?
Yeah. And that's when it was hardest on me, because the senile dementia, the Alzheimer's was setting in quite big time. And I'd go in, wake him up. He'd remember that what he had for breakfast 20, 30, 40 years ago. But it asked me for breakfast. And I'm like, Dad, I've already done your breakfast. You've had it. And then you went to sleep. And he's like, all right, okay, right. Yeah, you wait until my son gets here. Dad, I am your son. Yeah. Wait until my son gets here. He'll tell you. He'll show you.
Is that upsetting?
Oh, big time. That tore chunks out of me. Tore chunks out of my heart. I mean, it still does, but it's just part of life. You know, you just got to live with it and try your best to deal with it. And there are people out there that can and will help you with certain issues and tissues. So,
But at this moment in time, you as a teenage lad with a lot of responsibility, and your dad is slowly deteriorating and pulling away with his memory away from you.
Yeah.
When did it become too much?
It was basically when he was virtually gone. Like his memory had virtually all gone. He wouldn't know who I was, where he was, or anything like that.
Mm.
And as I said, the social worker or whoever she was, she saw that, and she saw it was wearing me down. I was wafer thin.
Mm.
And she went to Scott, "I don't mean to be rude or upsetting, but I think it's time and better for your dad to go into care or nursing home. And he'd be better off, and you'll be better off." And half of me at that precise moment thought, relief. But then at the same time, the other half of me was like, guilty. No, you can't do this. How can you leave him like this when he needs you the most? Do you know what I mean? So, but after sitting down and talking with the woman, I realised she put it to me in a certain way and went, "Look, Scott, it's best for the pair of you if you put him in a care home or nursing home or whatever, then you can go and visit him anytime you like, but you haven't got all that stress on your shoulders now."
Was it nice to have someone with their arm around you at that point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Making quite a big decision.
Yeah, because even my mates and everything, I just put a brave face on it.
Mm.
And all they saw was happy-go-lucky Scott. I mean, there was times, and there still is times now, that I virtually cry myself to sleep because of stress and things that I've been through.
Mm.
You know, it's just one of them things. I mean, like, I know someone of my age ain't supposed to admit that they cry, but hey, it's supposed to be a millennium thing, isn't it? Men are allowed to cry now. Or seen crying.
Strong men will talk about things like that. Just people who are very strong will, and I don't even think it's admitting. I think people who are strong and are aware of themselves will talk about things like that. Scott, when did you start drinking?
It wasn't too long after I became carer for my dad, because I didn't have school to worry about, because I was off school because I was a carer for my dad. And then slowly but surely started to realise what I've got myself into. And then the pressure was like building up on my shoulders, building up, and I needed a release. And because my dad was a drinker, I naturally turned to alcohol and started drinking from there. And, to my shame, I haven't really looked back. I mean, I'm still drinking now. I mean, I'm not a heavy, heavy drinker. I don't drink spirits. I don't drink super strong cans or anything like that. You know what I mean? I just have some beers, and that's me happy. it just puts me in a good place.
Well, and it's, you've been doing it for so long. You know, you did it when you were coping some of the most...
When I was under serious stress.
Yeah, you were doing it when you, to cope and you, to self-medicate, which is the, you know, alcohol is an obvious thing to go to elevate a mood and to make yourself feel good and to kind of distance yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Was you getting pissed, or was you just, was it just a gentle way of drinking when you were a teenager?
It vary. Sometimes I get pissed to forget about the day.
Mm.
And other times I'd get really drunk to try and forget where I am in life at this precise moment.
Because you felt disappointed?
No, not disappointed. I just thought like, well, I'm so young. Why is all this weight on my shoulders?
Mm. It felt unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that's the way our dad brought us up, was to be strong and look after each other. And the day I actually signed that bit of paper for him to go into care, I felt like I was signing away my soul. Do you know what I mean? It was like...
Through guilt?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you'd been doing something very courageous. You know, you'd been looking after the man that was supposed to look after you. Through no fault of his own, you were in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was courageous. I just thought it was a normal thing.
Mm.
My dad had looked after me and my brother. So now the tables are turned. That is the way of life.
Did you feel, or what did you feel like when he died? Because he died when you were towards your late teens.
Oh, I was shattered. I mean, when I say shattered, I mean shattered. I mean...
Do you mean emotionally shattered or physically?
Both. Mentally and physically, I was drained. I mean, my best mate had to come round. And I wouldn't say break down the door, but he was hammering on it like there's no tomorrow. Because I sort of like, almost became a recluse.
Mm.
I just wanted to lock myself behind the door and forget about life and the world. But he finally, well, just to stop him banging down the door, I answered it, and he's gone like, oh, mate, listen, I know you're hurting, but you know there are still people out here. My mum's been asking about you, and I can't give her no answer because I haven't spoke to you for X amount of time.
Mm.
So at least, like, come around my mum's house, and... she's cooking dinner and she wants to have a chat with you. And I was like, reluctantly, I was like, okay, all right, yeah. Let me go and get dressed, properly dressed. And then I got dressed and then went round his mum's house with him because she only lived just around the corner from me. And had a nice meal and... his mum sort of like shooed everyone out of the room. And then she sat down on the settee and had a nice little chat with me. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So that was really nice.
A moment in time you remember?
Yeah, big time. Because I was basically at the lowest of my low.
And this is you as a late teen?
Yeah. Yeah, and... she was like the social worker. She saw I was in bits. So that's why she got her son, my best mate, to come round and get me and take me back to their house, not only to make sure that I've eaten properly, but also to make sure that she could have a chat with me.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, to make check up on you, make sure you were all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And she is this the one who you'd known since a little boy?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. She used to take me to nursery, secondary, primary school.
Yeah, yeah, like an auntie.
For want of a better word, but I'd say more of like a mum that I never had, or you know what I mean.
Did you always live around there? You got into like your 20s, going into your adult life. Did you live and work in the area?
Not so much work in the area, but I've always lived in the area.
Mm. What did you do work wise then, going into your 20s? Was you always in sustained work?
No, it was on and off. At one point, I was a warehouse helper. Another point, this is going back some time, Safeways.
Mm.
Yeah, that's going back quite a few years now. I was, it was called ambient night worker.
That's a pleasant way of...
In other words, it's a glorified way of saying, like, yeah, you're on the night shift,
you're on the night
stocking
shift.
Shelves.
Yeah.
Yeah, filling the shelves up so they're ready for people in the morning.
But did you always graft though? Did you always seek work? Because you're
when
not...
I was up for it, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But sometimes I wasn't in the right place or the right frame of mind.
Can you, what do you mean by that?
Well, I had my ups and downs, just like everyone does. I mean, I suppose a good way of putting it is you have your good days and you have your bad days. Mine was like that, but also I had my good months, my bad months, good years, bad years. So it was very turbulent.
Did you go seek medical help?
I did try at one point, but I didn't really get that far with it. The person that I spoke to was sort of like talking down to me, or it felt like they were talking down to me instead of to me.
Mm.
So then, I mean, like, I was already on my feet, like, ready to run from the minute I walked through the door.
Did you go get help, or did someone help you get help, if that makes sense? Was you supported, or did you go voluntarily?
I tried voluntarily, but it didn't exactly work. So it was just one of them things. I mean, to be honest, it was only really when years later that I got to know SHP.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started getting my life back together, pulling my life back together.
Let's get that to, in between what we just talked about and then the SHP meeting. You'd carried on drinking. You've got a few children, and that was chaotic as well. With regarding access, is that fair to say?
In the end, yeah, it became chaotic. I mean, like from when they were first born. I mean, like, I was working up in Knightsbridge in a very famous shop. And I'd be there from morning till dusk. But also, I'd still wake up during the night and feed, change, and win the babies, the twins. Because we got him into a routine where one would wake up, so then you'd change, feed, wind, and then as soon as you put that one down,
the next one would wake up.
It's sort of like they had a signal to each other or something like, "Yeah, I'm Kushti, your turn."
Yeah, sort of out now.
Yeah, yeah.
And you was always there because you'd had an amazing dad in your life, and then you were then. Part of your children's lives.
Yeah.
Early life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, I mean, like, as I said, I mean, like, I'd get in from work shattered, see my twins, have me dinner, speak to the missus, have a kiss and a cuddle and whatnot, watch a film or something, and then go to sleep. And then I'd wake up at whatever time it was in the morning, like middle of the night, should I say, and then sort out the twins.
Were you drinking at this point?
Yes.
Was it an issue?
Not really, no.
Mm.
I mean, the missus had a little bit of the hump with it, but I did say to her when I first met her, you do know I've got a drinking problem. And she was like, oh, yeah, all right, yeah, sweet. And she thought she could get me out of it. But
What is a drinking problem when you say that? What do you mean?
Well, when I finished work, I used to go to the pub. There was a little hidden pub in Knightsbridge. Chris Evans used to go in there with his mate, Fat Boy.
Jimmy Five Bellies.
That's it, Jimmy Five Bellies. Yeah. And we used to see him in there all the time.
Mm.
And then basically I'd be in the pub for like a couple of hours and then like, right, okay, I've got to go. I'll see you tomorrow. And then...
So it became a habit, this like a kind of cultural habit. You'd go in there with your mates and it just became part of the daily life.
Yeah, and it was also to like talk about work and de-stress from work.
Mm.
And then that way, I haven't got to take it home with me and de-stress on her. Like, oh, today, oh, this happened, that happened, you know what I mean? Because she's had the kids. So her day's been, like, fully stressed.
How old were they when you stopped seeing them? Not of no fault of your own, but...
I can't actually remember, but it's got to be between 4 and 6.
Mm. Was that tough?
Oh, big time. That was another part of my heart gone.
Mm.
Because when me and her split up, we didn't see eye to eye. So it was always hard for me to get access. I had to take her to court.
Mm.
So then the courts turned around and said to her, right, you've got to give him access. So then I had to go to a contact centre to meet my kids.
And it was just, it was a, not an effort, but a fight all the time.
Yeah. I know this might sound biased, but it felt like every twist and turn I had to fight for.
Mm. Everything was against you. We spoke earlier on, and that's what it felt like to me, the way you were speaking, everything. You felt a bit, hamstrung, kind of like your hands tied.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, let me tie your hands behind your back. Oh, by the way, we're going to set the floor on fire and you need to climb up that wall.
Yeah, an impossible task.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's basically how it felt. And
you loved and you love your children.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I fought too for now. Until, in the end, I had to do what was right for them. I had to walk away because they were being used as weapons or ammunition.
Yeah, when children get weaponized, it can get nasty. I know several friends of mine that's had the same thing where they've had to walk away.
Yeah, it's one thing between the two adults, but it's another thing when the kids get involved.
Several years have passed and you got into financial difficulty, you got into debt that led to the possible eviction of your home that you'd been in for years and years, all your life. And it was a substantial amount of debt. You were at a low point then?
Probably my third lowest point. Mm. Apart from my dad and losing my twins, like not getting to see my twins.
What would day to day be like then? So you're in debt. You're potentially losing your property. You're not working. You're spiraling.
I was an emu, or an ostrich.
Yeah, head in the sand.
Put your head in the sand, even though your body's sticking out, and you can see it a mile away. So it's like, just because you're putting your head in the sand, don't mean to say everything's going to go away or you're not going to get attacked. But yeah, I just kept on brushing it to one side, hoping it would go away. I wake up tomorrow the next day, like after having X amount of drinks, and then going like, oh no, I'm still in debt. I'm still in trouble.
Were you drinking spirits at this point?
Sometimes I was, but I was. That was sort of like more turning towards beers and dropping out the spirits.
Did you used to leave, or was you in the house, curtains closed, kind of affair? Was it? Were you still getting out and seeing people?
Yeah, I was going out and seeing people, but mainly the wrong sort of people that were like heavy drinkers themselves.
Okay.
So it was sort of like it was like a spiral or a whirlpool, just keep on sucking me in. And other times I was just closing the curtains, closing the door and drinking away by myself.
Mm. To forget?
Yeah. Or try and make it go away.
I'll summarise this next little section, but it got to the point where you went to court, and from an earlier conversation, this is where something quite amazing happened, really. The judge told, I suppose, like the prosecution or whatever it'd be called, to go to get you some help. Instead of just forcing it down this avenue, let's get you some help with your housing and your finance. And that's where the introduction to a single homeless project came in.
Yeah.
So you met Rio.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
From there, my life slowly turned around. I mean, if you'd have seen me the first time that I met Rio, you would have seen a train wreck.
Mm.
I was that bad. To a certain extent, I was like, well, I'm going to lose my ass. I don't care.
Did you want to live?
It crossed my mind once or twice, I will admit. You know, because when you get that deep in debt and you feel like there's nowhere to turn to, you know what I mean? All sorts of things go through your head. And luckily, I pushed them back, you know what I mean, and just carried on the good fight. And with the help of SHP and Rio, wow. I mean, like, you'll probably speak to Rio at another time. I'll say to her, but you can tell her that I've given my permission for her to talk about me and my case.
Okay.
And she will say to you, like, how I was when she first met me to how I am now.
What was that short-term support she gave you that give you relief? What was the connection? You know, because they have a homeless prevention service, SHP have a homeless prevention service. She came in, and did you get evicted? What was the financial situation like?
I was still in bad debt.
Yeah.
But the judge had put a suspension order on the eviction, even though he could have signed it there and then, and that was me gone.
Yeah, a compassionate individual.
Yeah, I mean, like, he turned around and went to him like, you need to get him some help. You can't ask me to sign this without even offering him help.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put me into SHP, and then from there, Rio built up a communication with them. So where I was trying to say something to them and it was falling on deaf ears.
Yeah, you had a third party there to mediate.
Yeah, as soon as Rio said it, then they'd sit up and listen.
So what happened then? So financially, where are we at right now? So we was in maybe £10,000 worth of arrears and debt.
Yeah.
Are we still in that debt?
No, I'm clear now.
You're clear and you're managing finance everything. Month to month?
Yes.
You're in a good place and do you feel safe in your home, or do you feel like you could still lose your home?
I mean, I could lose it if I fall back.
No, but
I'm not going to.
But you're not going to, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I feel safe and secure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But because I've been down that road, it's always in the back of my head that I could always lose it again.
Yeah, there's fear that, and that could be a motivator as well and a driver.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what's made me pick up my heels and make sure that, right, I've got this money, this gets paid first, that gets paid second, that gets paid third, that gets paid fourth, right, yeah. Then shopping, then blah, 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 blah.
A budget.
I've got a couple of quid left over, I'll get myself a few beers.
Yeah.
Treat myself, because I've done everything first.
And did Rio help you with that? Kind of figure that out?
Yeah. She was always pointing me in the right direction. She wasn't forcing me or anything like that.
Mm.
She was suggesting like, okay, Scott, right, well, why don't you take this bull by the horn?
Mm.
And then once you've calmed that bull down, then grab hold of that bull.
She was looking after you, mate. She was looking after you.
Oh, big time.
With regards to looking after, during the pandemic, when that hit, what did you do when you started getting better and you started getting into a better place? What did you do to the local community, or what would you with individuals?
Well, there's four or five people that I knew that couldn't or wouldn't leave the house, their houses or their flats, whatever. And I said to them, like, okay, if you want, I'll pop down and get you gas and electricity. And then it went from there to, well, do you need something from the shop as well? And then it was like, okay. It turned into Deliver Scott.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but a point I do make is when I get a phone call from them, whoever it might be, I make sure that I stand there, obviously social distancing, for about half an hour and chat to them face to face, because virtually all of them, they don't see anyone face to face. They can FaceTime or speak to someone on the phone, but it's not the same when it's face to face. So I make sure I get there half an hour early, speak to them for a good half an hour, have a laugh and a joke and talk about this, that and the other, whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I go and get their shopping for them and top up their electric and gas or whatever they need. And then I come back, give them their shopping, and then I wait for them to put it away. And then I stay there for at least another half an hour having a chat with them. I mean, not only does it make them feel good, but it makes me feel good. You know what I mean? Because, as I said, chatting to people one-to-one, especially over the last 18 months, it's been a bit hard, to say the least.
It has, and these small things make a huge impact. Scott, thank you so much, and we will leave it there.